Good morning. I'm Glenn Moberg in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network. We appear to have fixed the technical problems that kept my voice from getting to you from our Wausau studio over the previous hour, so we're good to go. And it is 7 minutes after 7 o'clock on a Monday morning, and that means it's time for our state capitol report. There is a lot to talk about this morning. Last week, the new state budget was passed on a strict party line vote in the Assembly and Senate, with no Democrats in either chamber voting for approval. Democrats say the new budget will devastate education, roll back environmental protection, hurt programs that are critical for poor people, the elderly, and the handicapped, and cripple local units of government with the loss of state aid. Republicans say the tough choices were necessary because of a more than $3 billion deficit, that the new budget balances the books for the first time in years without accounting tricks or fund transfers, and that it will pave the way for a more prosperous Wisconsin. Also on today's agenda, the state Supreme Court decision to overturn a Dane County judge's injunction against the collective bargaining law. Did the judge overreach, or did the Supreme Court destroy Wisconsin's open meetings law? A union lawsuit means collective bargaining is now headed to federal court. Also, the resignation of UW-Madison Chancellor Biddy Martin and an alleged map that would redraw Wisconsin's northern congressional districts. In the second half hour, we'll be hearing from Republican and Democratic legislators on these topics. Our Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter Sean Johnson joins us first, and you can too at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email at talk@WPR.org. Sean Johnson, busy week last week.
Busy week for a few weeks now, Glenn. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you holding
up? Good, good.
The governor calls the budget an honest document that balances the budget without accounting tricks or fund transfers. Democrats call it an assault on the middle class. They say it will hurt education, technical colleges, the UW system, the poor, the elderly, health care services, public transportation, and the environment. How are things playing out in Madison right now?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt this is the kind of budget that we haven't really seen in Madison, in the state capitol, and there's a couple figures that you could look at and just look at those and realize that it's different than those we've seen in the past. One, and the one that Republicans are pointing to, is that the nonpartisan legislative fiscal bureau puts out a memo at the completion of every budget to show Wisconsin's structural deficit, you know, the deficit that it's carrying forward into the next biennium, based on the document that legislators are voting on today. And, you know, normally there's at least a little bit of a structural deficit that hangs out there in that document that, you know, no matter what party's in charge, in this case, that structural deficit is erased on that Legislative Fiscal Bureau memo. And so you can expect to hear Republicans talk about that. I mean, another figure, if you want to just look at a dollar figure or a number we haven't seen before in Wisconsin state budget, is the massive school cut. You just haven't seen cuts in state aid like you do in this budget. You know, $800 million in state aid, that's not counting categorical aids, which are, you know, money that's set aside for specific programs, and it's not counting the loss ability for local school districts to make up the difference through property taxes. They actually lose the ability to raise revenue in that way. And so those two things alone, even if you didn't look at anything else in this budget, and there's a lot to look at, those two things alone show that it's different than we've seen before.
And there appears to be a real big dispute over exactly the effect of that $800 million cut in aid to local schools. We just heard a report from Brian Bull that the Racine School District is considering a lawsuit.
Yeah, and I mean, that's something that a lot of people have kind of wondered when a lawsuit might come in Wisconsin as it relates to school funding, because, I mean, distribution of school aid, though not talked about in that term specifically, but distribution of school aid is talked about in the state constitution. There's a section on education. And so, you know, it may be that if a district can prove that the state's not meeting its obligations, they have a case. But We don't know. I mean, and one of the things that Republicans, the governor in particular, have talked about is, yes, we're cutting schools, but we have these new, because of that collective bargaining bill, schools can cut back on their labor costs now and they can absorb those cuts. Although you heard in these budget hearings throughout the state from a lot of districts who said, that tool doesn't give us everything we need. These cuts are still going to hurt.
Well, Alberta Darling says the tools given to local units of government will offset those budget cuts, allowing the full funding of education. The people who are members of the teachers' unions, I think, kind of resent the loss of their collective bargaining rights as being called a tool.
Yeah, and it's called a tool over and over again, and that is going to be very. It's going to vary by district. There are going to be some districts that come out fairly well in all this, or as well as could be hoped, given the budget circumstances and the budget cuts you're seeing. And that's on a district level. That's not saying that those individual teachers' unions or, that everybody's going to be happy. There are going to be some districts that are that were already struggling that this budget may push over the edge. You know, as it always does, this budget will vary district by district when it comes to school funding.
Well, Bob Jauch, who is an outspoken liberal from the Superior area, a state senator, says that the budget abandons Wisconsin's moral and constitutional commitment to equal education. And he says rural schools will be hardest hit by the cuts, while wealthier districts in the southeastern part of the state will actually see increases. Is that the case, just in terms of the dollar amounts going to the different school districts? And if so, do we really have a constitutional requirement that says all of the school districts have to be treated the same way?
Already all the school districts are not treated the same way. A lot of people would point to Milwaukee's public schools and the way that they're treated with the voucher school system over there and the way that property taxes are assessed over there as being... though it's certainly not been found this way in court, a lot of people believe that violates the Constitution there. I guess I come back to district by district, it will vary. There's some stuff in the budget that helps districts have declining enrollment offset budget cuts. But a lot of the districts up in Senator Jauch's area are going to be hurt.
Now, a little bit later in the program, we're going to hear from Mark Pocan, a Democratic assemblyman from Madison. And you mentioned the Legislative Fiscal Bureau report saying the state's structural deficit would be wiped out. But Pocan, on his blog, says the budget claim is dishonest. He says the 10-year cost of the reduced revenue is at $2.3 billion. He says they're using credit card spending to push $338 million in state debt into the future. He's talking about $411 million in fundraise. He says in the 2012 biennium, it will cost the state $501 million in lost revenue because of what he calls giveaways to the rich. And he also claims that despite the talk in freezing taxes, the Republican budget will result in $438 million in property tax increases. How can we have such a disparity in just a characterization of the what should be objective numbers coming out of this budget?
Yeah, well, I mean, the number that we mentioned at the top of the show that comes out from the Fiscal Bureau on the structural deficit, they look at a very distinct set of facts to come up with that number. And, you can do a lot of stuff outside of that, that Representative Pocan is talking about that won't necessarily be reflected in that number. You know, when you talk about the $2.3 billion in reduced tax revenue, I mean, those are tax cuts that it's going to cost the state in the long run that lost revenue. But that doesn't really speak to the Fiscal Bureau's memo for the next year. Credit card financing, yeah, there is refinancing of state debt that is going to cost the state more in the long run. But over the short run, which is where you're looking at that structural deficit, that's not necessarily reflected. And there are fund raids in here. You know, the biggest one that didn't get much attention is that you're now going to have, you know, during the Doyle years, you had a lot of money from the transportation fund flowing into the general fund to pay for schools. This year, you're going to have money from the general fund where it pays for schools and other programs. You'll have some of that money flowing into the transportation fund and through sales tax and new vehicles.
The transportation has actually increased by 1.2% in this budget, correct?
Yeah, they were, given the budget circumstances, I think you'd have to consider them one of the winners in the way that the budget turned out.
Okay, you're listening to our Monday morning State Capitol Report with Wisconsin Public Radio's Sean Johnson. We wonder what you think. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our forecast for Wisconsin, partly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms in the southern part of the state, especially toward the Illinois border. Otherwise, a slight chance of showers in central Wisconsin. Highs in the 70s to low 80s, but cooler near Lake Superior. Tonight, more showers and storms, some of which could bring heavy rain to central Wisconsin. Fog is also possible. Lows in the mid-50s in the Northwoods to mid-60s in the southwest. We're going to take a short break. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 20 minutes after 7 o'clock. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Joy Cardine. In our 8 o'clock hour, we discuss how to turn our urban communities into resilient cities by embracing green alternatives to local food production with our guest Thomas Dunbar, the Executive Director of the Center for Resilient Cities. Also this afternoon at 1 o'clock, you can join us for Beneath the Surface, a special regional broadcast exploring the Great Lakes. That's today at 1 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. But right now, it's a State Capitol Report with Wisconsin Public Radio's Sean Johnson. In the next half hour, we'll be joined by Republican State Senator Frank Lissay and Democratic Assemblyman Mark Pocan. Now, if you'd like to weigh in on the new state budget, the state Supreme Court decision on the open meetings law and collective bargaining, the recall elections, the resignation of Biddy Martin, or any other state news, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. And let's go right to the phones. We have Mark in Mineral Point. Mark, you're on the Joy Cardine Show.
Yeah, good morning. The issue I want to raise is the loss of integrity in the decision-making process and how that relates to the content of what the new decisions and the new laws are. And the two examples that I want to bring up are, first, the Biddy Martin case, in which Biddy Martin went behind the backs of those of us who are faculty in the UW system, behind the backs of the regents, behind the backs of the students and the citizens of Wisconsin, to cut a deal to corporatize the UW system, lowering academic quality and lowering the academic integrity of things that are produced in terms of scholarly work. That's number one. The second case is something that has just emerged over the last 2 or 3 days or so, and that is that there's evidence that there was collusion between the right-wing members of the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the Republican lawmakers, the people over in the legislature, as far as both the timing and the outcome of the case involving the, collective bargaining rights and related matters. And I think that in both cases, you had corporations corrupting our decision-making process and also creating a result that was against the people of Wisconsin in favor of the wealthiest 1% of the population.
Okay, Mark, thanks so much for the phone call. We want to give Sean Johnson a chance to respond to both of your points. Sean, first of all, Governor Walker and Scott Fitzgerald, the Republican leadership, they said they needed a favorable decision from the Supreme Court by Tuesday afternoon, or they would have to include the collective bargaining provision in the state budget. The Supreme Court delivered a favorable ruling by Tuesday afternoon as requested. Was this just a coincidence, or do we, as Mark implied, do we no longer have an independent judiciary in this state?
Oh, boy. You know, I don't know. As far as evidence, I hesitate to say there's hard, fast evidence. Although, you know, obviously the same parties and the same interests that elect members of the legislature, leaders over there, are working on Supreme Court campaigns. I mean, that the lines have clearly blurred when it comes to that, you know. So the same people that have been active, the same groups that have been active in the last few Supreme Court races, definitely active in races for the legislature.
And it came down to a 4-3 decision with a conservative liberal split. And we heard all those television ads, a vote for David Prosser is a vote for Scott Walker. And liberal Ed Garvey on his blog says that's how it worked out Tuesday afternoon.
And really, if you read the dissenting opinion, I think you could call it a scathing dissenting opinion. Maybe that word's overused a bit too much. But if you read the dissenting opinion by Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson, who's definitely considered in the court's liberal bloc, she accused Justice Prosser, really singled him out of having a partisan slant to his concurring opinion in that Supreme Court case last week. And, she also accused the majority of having an opinion full of errors. She said, quote, unreasoned judgments breed contempt for the law. And she said that by ruling the way they did, it was leading the state down a dangerous path.
My old friend here in Wausau, Walter John Chilson, was on the Weekend Review show on Friday, and I was running the audio board for him here in Wausau, and he said he was shocked by how intemperate Shirley Abramson's comments were. It comes down to the fact that we've got two sides that just don't seem to be talking to each other, and when they talk at each other, what they're saying isn't very pleasant.
No, the majority was not gentle in its treatment of the Circuit Judge Marianne Soumy either. And Judge Soumy is the judge who issued the ruling blocking the collective bargaining plan back in March and carrying on through, up here until June. And the majority said that she had invaded the legislature's constitutional powers and erred in enjoining publication of the law. So they're not using wishy-washy verbs there. Invaded is a pretty strong statement to a judge, and many of them were judges before they rose to power in the Supreme Court.
Well, let's pick up on Mark's second point, or actually it was his first point.
Uh-huh.
The resignation of Chancellor Biddy Martin at UW-Madison, that comes in the wake of the failure of her move to get UW-Madison split from the UW system.
Yes. I mean, a very short-lived tenure for a UW-Madison chancellor, and obviously created some enemies during that time. I mean, the other campuses did not like her plan, felt like it was hatched without they're okay, certainly. She definitely had her enemies within the system. And was, but throughout this process was very outspoken in support of this plan to give UW-Madison more autonomy. But the timing of her departure is really remarkable because, we basically come to the end of that debate and decide, well, all campuses will have some flexibility, but UW-Madison, you're not going to split off. So knocked that idea down, and almost immediately Chancellor Martin announced that she was out of here.
And let's look at how the budget affects Medicaid. It cuts $500 million from Medicaid, increases copays and deductibles, but senior care members won't be required to enroll in Medicare Part D. And there is a Journal Sentinel article today which says that the governor's budget will give him unprecedented power to remake Badger Care Plus and other state health programs with little legislative oversight.
And this all goes back to the bill where all that collective bargaining language was passed, the collective bargaining bill from earlier this year. One of the provisions that was lesser noticed in all that debate was a provision that gives the Department of Health Services Secretary pretty much unprecedented authority in Wisconsin to remake the state's medical assistance programs as he fits. And so, you know, when you talk about a $500 million unspecified cut to Medicaid, you know, having an unspecified cut like that is not new, in that Democrats did the same thing with Jim Doyle last session, basically said, figure this out, Governor, make these cuts somewhere. What's new this year is that the kind of cuts that the Walker administration could make, and you don't know if they will, but they certainly could make cuts that change who's eligible for programs like Badger Care and how much they pay.
And I want to cover one more thing before we run out of time. We're doing that very quickly for this first half hour. According to the Journal Sentinel, a map is being circulated, allegedly drawn up by Paul Ryan, to change the boundaries of northern Wisconsin congressional districts to protect 7th District Congressman Sean Duffy, a freshman Republican. It removes Democratic strongholds, Wisconsin Rapids, Stevens Point, and Chippewa Falls from the district. Chippewa Falls, incidentally, being the backyard of opponent Pat Kreitlow and his base of support.
Yeah, that is, and this is one of the congressmen that that you cover, obviously. It's my understanding, and this is something that was a map that was discovered or leaked to the Craig Gilbert of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It's my understanding from his most recent article on this that the map would leave Pat Kreitlow in the district.
What Pat Kreitlow says.
Okay. So,
right in his backyard. The district ends like right by his backyard. He says he can look across a farm field and see an area that's no longer in the district.
Oh, yeah, I think it's classic gerrymander. It looks like. I mean, it's sort of a trade-off. You're making Ron Kind's district a little more Democratic, maybe assuming that, boy, if we didn't get him in 2010, we're not going to get him. And in the process, you're making Sean Duffy's district a little bit more Republican, so that the chances of him hanging on for more than a term are better under this map.
Sean, we're out of time. Thanks to our Capitol reporter, Sean Johnson. After the news, we'll be hearing from Republican Senator Frank Lissay and Mark Pocan, Democratic Assemblyman. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Joy Cardine.